This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So welcome
this
again.
This is a very exciting episode.
This is where you get to hear somebody else's voice, which is fairly nice.
We've got a guest.
Here we have.
Is it the first time you've ever interviewed anyone?
No.
All right.
No, I'm a dab hand at this.
Really?
Yeah. Cheeky.
Whatever. This is our episode about arthrogryposis.
Well done, Emily. Amy. High five. I just call you Emily.
It's all right. I've been called worse.
Well done.
So my friend Colette has her youngest son Luke, who's an amazing child. Yeah. You'll hear all about him. He's got arthrogryposis.
Yeah.
And well, we talk all about it in the podcast, so you can listen. But this is—it's very, very good. I hope you will agree.
It's very informative.
Yes.
It's probably not a condition that you've probably heard about very often.
No, the bloke off who was on Strictly this last time had it.
Yeah, and that caused a bit of a, you know, sort of, I guess, a surge of information that people were looking for.
Yep.
So it's a really good thing to highlight. He's an amazing little boy. His mum's amazing. His family are amazing.
Yes. It's an uplifting podcast as well.
Yeah, and it's Colette is wonderful and very fun.
Yeah, she's wicked. But enjoy. Yeah. Subscribe.
And subscribe.
See you in a bit.
See ya. Work.
So, Colette.
Hello.
Hello. Me and Colette are friends from school. Mm-hmm. We're mum friends, aren't we?
Yeah.
We met on one of the many mum's nights out.
I think we met through Laura, didn't we?
Yes, we did, yeah. In the toilets Laura, of the Lizard Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
In South Woodford.
So many memories.
Yes. But the reason that we thought it'd be good to get you on today to talk about your wonderful son, Luke.
Lovely, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, yeah.
We're very honoured.
So, how's Luke?
What do you want? I mean, Johnson's...
I want to know everything because I was aware that Luke was different, but I didn't really know what... Mm-hmm. Why? Yeah. And when we went to 51st State Festival, as we were walking the long walk from the taxi up into the festival, you told me this amazing story, and I was just like, oh my God, the world needs to hear this.
Yeah.
And that's basically why I thought about doing this podcast, was just literally to so the world could hear your story.
He is pretty amazing. So he was, he's my fourth child, so I've got, when I got pregnant with him, I wasn't expecting to have four children. That was really, I think number three and number four were a bit of a surprise after having the two girls. Anyway, we were really happy we were having another child, and we went swimmingly along to the scan. I think I hadn't had any problems with the other pregnancies or anything to do with the birth. Everything was quite simply for those three. And then we went along for the scan. We actually had Kira with us, who's my oldest. She was 11 at the time. She was off six as she came to the hospital. And we had the scan, and then we saw that Luke's hands were kind of, well, the baby's hands at times, we didn't call him Luke, but his hands were kind of straight, and they were sort of like cupped together backwards. So and he had a club foot. So the sonographer, I think they're called, she said, oh, maybe he's not moving his arm. He has got a club foot. Maybe he's not moving his arms because, you know, he's just asleep or something. So she said, go off and walk around. And then she came back, and then she said, no, he's got something wrong with his arms. So she said, I think it might be something called arthrogryposis. So we obviously never heard of that.
No.
It's not common. And then she said, we'll refer you on to like King's College Hospital, which is a specialist hospital for diagnosis and pregnancy.
So were you around here?
Yes. That was at Whips Cross. So it was a bit of a shock because Jude was 2, Nadia was 5, Kira was 11, so we had 3 young children. I was working. I run a charity in Hackney, so I was really, and we were running a, like, as well as everything else that we do in the charity, we were running a Pru at the time. So it was really, really hectic, massive staff team. And I was just thinking, gosh, what's going to happen? And I think we hadn't, just because we hadn't expected any problems, it was a little bit of a shock as well. I think I was about 20 weeks pregnant then. And actually at the 12-week scan, he'd been fine. So something had happened between 12 and 20 weeks. So it wasn't like that at 12 weeks. Yeah. You know, when you see them moving around, their arms and their legs.
Yeah.
And then he, so we got referred to King's College Hospital. I didn't really do any research on what arthrogryposis was, but my husband did. And it does say in the research that babies can die with it. Yeah. It's a muscle condition. But I hadn't actually, I didn't really want to know. So we'll go and wait and see what they say. So we went to see this, consultant, and he had me in the scan room. And because it's a teaching hospital, there's about 5 or 6 people there. And he just scanned my tummy and he said, oh, this baby won't live for more than 2 hours after he's born. And I was just like, wow, I sort of accepted to have a child with a disability, but not that he would die, but, you know, in birth kind of thing, or before he was born. So he was horrible, the consultant. It was really cold. And I think that even then I was thinking, gosh, has this got something to do with, like, the cost of a life, I suppose, in his mind, how much a child with a disability is going to cost.
So what is,
arthrogryposis. So it's called, it's actually called arthrogryposis multiplex congenita. So arthrogryposis, I think it's a Greek word, but it means limbs not moving. So a multiplex means multiple.
Yeah.
And congenita means you're going to be born with it.
Yeah.
So there's disabilities and things that people have that they get diagnosed after birth, but with it, if it's congenital, it means they're born with it. So they knew. So they saw his foot was upside down, his legs were straight, his arms were twisted like this. And he sent me off to like a room. I started to cry, and he just said, "Oh, you go up to the room, and I'll come and talk to you." And he never came to talk to us. and then he said, the nurse came and she said, "We'll refer you to a geneticist." So we had a horrendous weekend before we went to see the geneticist. We had to go back there, and we actually just didn't really want to talk to anybody. So we booked, I wanted to go to Brighton because I love Brighton, but we couldn't get booked anywhere. So I booked a travel lodge in Eastbourne, which I'd never been to before. And then we just went with the kids down to Eastbourne for the weekend. And I just remember I couldn't sleep. So I remember waking up and just seeing this, like, out to sea. And I don't know if you've been to Eastbourne, but there's like a big, there's a lighthouse and it's called Sovereign's Lighthouse. It's like a big cross out in the sea.
Yeah.
And I just felt then, like, I don't know, it was like a message from God, like, he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, that's really weird, but it just felt a sort of, even though it was going to be hard. Yeah,
sense of relief.
Then we went to, we went to the geneticist, who was absolutely lovely. She was so kind. She scanned me again. She said, no, that is the diagnosis. She got it all in writing. He won't live after birth because his tongue, your tongue's a muscle. And she said, you won't be able to swallow and you won't be able to breathe. So if you can't swallow, and when you're in the pregnancy, they swallow the fluid, don't they? Right, so they regurgitate the fluid. Yeah. It goes in and out, and they pee it out, I think. Anyway, she said, you know, we really recommend termination. I was like, I'm not terminating. And I'll have him until he's born. And if that's what happens, that's what happens. But I'm not going to terminate him. And so we left really really devastated.
Is that just personal because you don't agree with termination, or do you just
No, I don't.
Feel...
It's not that I don't agree with it. I think if it had been my first, I probably would have just been so scared. I was 39 at the time, and I had 3 kids, and I'd been around a lot more people with disabilities, and I'd been around, and I have a really big support network. Like friends from around here in South Woodburg, friends in Hackney, I've got a massive support network.
Yeah.
So I just thought, you know what, plus my friend's baby had just died as well. So I really thought, like, one of my best friends, her baby died at 6 weeks.
Oh, God.
He was her 8th child. She's a doctor. It was horrendous. So she'd just been through that. Then I got pregnant, and it was just... And then I was told my baby was going to die as well. So I'm just thinking... So I sort of thought, you know what, I'll just... I'll
take a chance.
And also, she's a doctor, she actually said to me, because most people do terminate, they don't know what happens between 20 and 40 weeks. You know, sometimes things can change. So she said, I'm not saying it's going to change, but, you know, this is what they've said, and we have it in writing. And then I didn't really, I wish at the time I'd sort of Googled and joined arthrogryposis groups, because I run quite a few of them now myself, because so many people get told that, and that's a very rare outcome. It's probably actually about 10% of babies that will die at birth because they won't be able to breathe.
Yeah. And they tell people that that's what's going to happen.
That's the worst case scenario, isn't it? Yeah, that's what they have.
Okay, so then we kept going back to King's College, and you know, that lady had been lovely, but I've never had panic attacks in my life. I hated the place.
Yeah.
And we were seen as like an interesting case, and I just didn't like that. And you know, young kids at the time as well, so it was really stressful. Yeah. So I asked them to refer me back to Whipps Cross at about, what the geneticist told me as well, because he wasn't swallowing. She said, what will happen is all the fluid will go into your body and you blow up like a balloon, you'll puff up.
Yeah.
And you'll miscarry them anyway. I said, if that's what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the technical term for it, but anyway, it didn't happen. I carried quite small. I was quite healthy in all my pregnancies, and it was exactly the same.
Yeah.
So I didn't puff up, and I kept thinking, well, I'm not puffing up, and I didn't miscarry, and I felt fine. And then I got them to refer me back to Whipps Cross, and I actually went with my mum to Whipps Cross, and there was a lovely sonographer there, and I've got a friend who's a midwife, and she knew her, and she had about an hour with us. She was so sweet and so lovely, and she actually said, the baby I'm seeing doesn't look like the baby on the notes. I see he's got issues with his arms and his legs, but he doesn't look like he's not got some of the stuff that they've said that he has. So she was really thorough.
And
I've still got it in my fridge, but it basically this little hand came up.
Oh.
And his hands are sort of twisted round, so when he was born they were cupped like underneath. This hand came up and it kind of waved. Only four fingers, not a thumb. Anyway, she just happened to take a picture of that moment. So I've got the scan picture of his hand in my womb, and I just felt then he's going to be fine.
You know,
I just knew he was going to. It was almost like a message.
Yeah, it's a sign.
You know, like, just trust me, I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
So then when I had him at cesarean, because they weren't sure about his arms and legs, they were brilliant at Whipps Cross as well. I think they were a bit shocked when he came out. Because generally they don't have many babies that have quite a severe disability when at birth, because it's the worst it's going to be at birth. So what happens is your muscles stop developing. So something happened between 12 and 20 weeks where I probably had a virus. This is what they reckon some people call it. This is non-genetic, so it's not a genetic condition.
Right.
So I probably had a virus, probably had a temperature, and something happened to stop the message going to the brain to create the muscles.
Yeah.
So he just didn't have any muscles forming. So he didn't have biceps, and he didn't have some muscles in his legs, so therefore all the limbs get twisted and they get fixed and they get stuck. So that's why, because babies are normally moving around, so they all get fixed and twisted. So when they're born, they're very tight and twisted, and like his leg looked like it'd been put on backwards, his feet were upside down, his arms were stuck, they didn't move, his arms didn't move for 3 months, they were just stuck in this position. And anyway, I was overjoyed when he was born.
Yeah.
He was fine. They took him to special care for about 15 minutes and then brought him back, because he was fine. You know, he's just, you know, apart from his limbs, he's absolutely healthy and fine. So then we went through kind of working out, what do we do now? Whipps Cross were really good, but we got referred, thank God, straight away to Royal London. So he was 2 weeks old. And we saw this surgeon, the first time we'd met him, and he actually said, like, he's an expert in childhood issues. He's just a coffee expert, but he is an expert on arthrogryposis. Yeah. So most of the cases either go to Great Ormond Street or to Royal London to him. So he said to us, you know, we'll become friends, you know, like, you have to learn to trust me with your baby. And I was just like thinking, you're nutter. I'm not going to worry about it. Anyway, I've met his wife and kids, and we know them, and he's lovely. And I totally trust him.
Yeah.
So he just knew what he needed to do. And what they do is they do the feet first.
That's right,
They turn the feet around. Yeah. So he had, like, from 2 weeks old, he had casts on his cereal casting.
Yeah.
So every week I used to have to take Jude and him in the double buggy from South Wadeford to Royal London Hospital. Get up and down the stairs, because there was no lift, no escalator there. And then get his fleece cast taken off with a saw. You know, take them off with a saw, like plaster ones. And then put back on again. And he's screaming, because obviously they're manipulating his feet.
Every week.
That was for about 16 weeks that went on for. Not, it wasn't always just me and my own, but other people came with me, and my husband came and stuff. Anyway, his feet started to turn round, and he had surgery at 3 months. It was amazing, actually, when you see the pictures of his feet moving round.
They do some
surgery on his tendon and his ankle at 3 months, and that kind of, and then they put him in casts again, and then they put him in boots and bar for till he was about four. Actually, he used to have them on, like, they're, if you've ever seen them, they're boots with a bar in the middle, and they keep his feet in that position, so because they reset them,
and
they have to keep them like that. And then he had one hip that was out of joint, and they monitored that, and then he had to have hip surgery when he was 15 months twice. So I used to be carrying, so all the whole school know me. He's already had three kids there. So I used to be bringing this baby in with this, like, literally a cast from his chest down to his feet.
Wow.
And that was a bit of a nightmare, because he had one surgery and then it didn't work, and his hip popped back out again, and he had to go back in 2 weeks after. And this is major surgery.
Wow, yeah.
Hip's a really difficult surgery. Anyway, got through
and
that.
And especially on something that small as well.
Yeah, I know, but I could carry him around. I've seen children having that surgery bigger, and it's a nightmare because literally they are just like this.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always, like, he's a very cheerful person, but he was generally pretty cheerful all the way through. He just adapted.
Yeah.
And then we then had to have knee surgery because once he had the hip had healed, then we realised his knee was going backwards. When he started to stand up, so he was in a standing frame, and then he was a walk, like a gait trainer walker, so he used to get around on that. So he actually started school in a walking frame.
Wow.
Not one that he could move, one that he could push around himself.
Yeah.
And that's just been, he's had some arm surgery, he's had a muscle taken from one bit and put in the other, but not anything for a long time.
Yeah.
So now it's just monitoring it. Like, he wears a splint on his foot leg to try and keep his foot straight now. But he actually really likes going to hospital. He's like having surgery, but he loves going to hospital.
And how do they adapt to it at school and things? How does school adapt?
I think the school have been really brilliant because they knew us.
Yeah.
There was Emma was the senko at the infant school. I don't think you guys would have known her, but she was lovely. So everything was kind of put in place before he needed it. So Kim, who's a friend of mine, she was working in the nursery. She'd got girls the same age as mine, so she was working in the nursery at the time. So they just kind of let her look after him, even though she wasn't his trained LS.
Yeah.
EHCP or anything. Yeah. So they just sort of allocated her to him, and then she was actually with him all the way through till about 2 years ago. And she's like a mum to him, really.
Yeah.
To the point of thinking then he was like, oh gosh, come on. Stop fussing over me. So I think with the school, everything that I've been really lucky.
Yeah.
Because everything we've needed has been sorted out before he's needed it even.
Okay. Yeah,
You know, so I've really got a lot of respect for them.
Yeah.
And I trust them with him as well.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and obviously they're moving into the junior school.
Yes.
It's a bit of like, oh gosh, he's gone to a different school. But Mrs. Linning knew him.
Yeah.
She was Jude's teacher. So everybody had kind of seen him come through the school. So they'd always made provision for him, I suppose. And I think also like having him there, they've always got quite a lot of children with disabilities and special needs.
Yeah.
So they are pretty good at it, I always think. I know probably not everybody's had that experience, but I think most people I know have had a really good...
Smaller school as well, so I think they can cope with, actually quite complex cases rather than just...
Exactly. His is physical, so he doesn't need, like... So he's got Mr. Gandhi, I don't know if you've ever met him, he's lovely. So he's his one-to-one now, and he had Mr. Manners, who works in Mr. Manners, who's become our friend now as well. So he's always kind of had really good people looking after him, who just... Because he needs help a bit with writing, and like with the SATs at the moment, they're scribing for him, so he'll answer the question and then they'll write it, because I can't write fast.
Yeah.
But generally, I mean, he's like, I was just saying that to... they'd phoned about the SATs things, whatever they're called, mocks that they're doing.
I
don't care about these kind of things. Yeah. But they were saying, I don't care either, or homework.
He's alive, isn't he?
Well, I was saying that to Louise Ditchburn, I think she's the head or deputy head now, and she was phoning me and like, tell me about it. She said, no, you don't care about the SATs.
Yeah.
But he cares what he gets.
Oh,
he does, because he's really competitive.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, so he really wants to do well, and he's doing just as well as all of his classmates. Yeah. And it's not measured by the SATs, but I just think generally all the way through.
Yeah.
I was just speaking to another mum actually, whose son is in, actually, he's affected just in his legs, but he can't walk. And she was saying that the other kids in his class really baby him. And he's realising they're babying him a bit.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're equal. And I haven't really seen that with Luke.
Yeah.
I think because he's got a strong character and he's quite likeable. His physio, that he's retired now, when she first met him, she used to come to the house a lot, but she actually said his face will get him a long way.
Yeah.
Because he's got a really beautiful face.
Yeah, he's
And beautiful. She said, if children with disabilities have got anything on their face, sometimes it can just be harder for them.
Yeah.
Because people see his face before they see the disability.
Absolutely.
So we've had, I mean, it's not been easy. It's been really challenging just because we had other children to manage as well. And obviously watching your baby go through all of that.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really remember it. He only remembers having arm surgery when he was six. He doesn't remember any of the other stuff at all. And people used to say that to me, he won't remember.
No.
Adults used to say to me, we don't remember, but we know he can walk now.
Yeah.
And not all kids with arthrogryposis. We were lucky to have been in the right place in London and find the right surgeon. And now being part of networks all over the world, you realise people really struggle, even in the UK, to get to see the right doctor.
Because
if you're in a small town and a hospital, and they've never seen a child with this condition. But it's actually like, I think it's like 1 in 3,000 live births. So it's not as, it's as rare as common, sorry, as spina bifida.
Bifida, yeah.
Nobody's ever heard of arthrogryposis. Well, yeah.
Is that because they can't say it?
No, exactly.
Yeah. No, I talked about it.
Yeah. Well, they kind of call it AMC, actually. That's okay. Like a shortened version.
Okay.
But it's true, even I'm like, how do you spell that again?
I always tell people about this amazing story, because it's like, you didn't think he'd live past 2 months.
Exactly.
And he did a 5K, didn't he, last year? Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, but I can never remember what he's...
No, when I,
it's
when
too
I,
many letters.
When I asked him, she said, I don't know. I don't just know. After this, I don't know.
People know more about it now. There's been a few... Will Bailey, who's a Paralympic table tennis player, he has a different form. He's got genetic form.
Okay.
But he's got arthrogryposis, and he was recently in Strictly.
Right.
He had to step, but you could see he had a disability. I don't know what Strictly, because I didn't only watch it because he was in it.
No,
but
my mum did.
Yeah.
And she said, ooh.
Yeah, but he's got distal arthrogryposis, right, which is genetic. Luke's isn't genetic. So it's like an umbrella term for lots of
Yeah, so genetic, would that have meant both his mum and his dad would have been a carrier? Or?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, quite often you don't know if you're a carrier, and sometimes it's just the combination with genetic conditions.
Yeah, so my brother had cystic fibrosis.
Which is genetic.
Yeah. So both my mum and my dad were a carrier,
right? Okay.
And he had cystic fibrosis.
Wow. But they would never have known.
But they never know. Yeah, so when I had Idris through IVF, I had to be tested before I went through it, because they won't give you IVF if you are a carrier.
Okay.
Obviously, you don't. Yeah. I mean,
what is cystic fibrosis?
So it affects the lungs. It's like the buildup of mucus.
Mm.
A lot of cystic fibrosis sufferers spend a lot of time having physiotherapy to get all the mucus up. Can't feed properly, so you have feeding tubes, and it's very debilitating. I mean, I can remember Toby spending quite a lot of time in hospital. He only had one lung, so he didn't have use of his other lung, and he was offered a heart and lung transplant, but he didn't want to take it. He just felt like he used to write poetry, poetry constantly, and I remember when we sort of spoke about, you know, having the operation, and he felt like he would have had somebody else's heart inside him. It would have made him completely different. Although it wouldn't have, it was just the mechanics of it.
Yeah.
But in his head, he was, you know, 18, 19, I think, at the time, and he'd been offered a place at university. So he went, but he didn't tell anybody he had cystic fibrosis.
Wow.
He told them he had asthma.
Okay,
he went to Bristol.
Really serious as well.
Yeah, I know. He went to Bristol University. He'd get a taxi from the bottom of the hill to the top. Yeah, he'd just say, I'd got asthma.
Wow.
But he unfortunately passed away at 21. But that was his choice.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, as a family, although it was hard to... go through that period of grieving. Now I think, oh my God, I'm so thankful that you made that decision for yourself.
Yeah.
Rather than being in a situation where that's taken away from you.
Yeah.
So it's
not a long life expectancy. I can say probably 20s. I've got another friend who's lost her daughter to that.
Yeah.
24 or something.
Yeah. These genetic disorders, they're quite interesting when you and the children especially, they are. Yeah,
you suddenly get involved. Even like the work I do, I know people with disabilities and different long term illnesses and health conditions.
Yeah,
but when it's in your family, you get a whole different view on it. And then you just meet. I mean, I feel honoured to know the people I know through having Luke. You know, the communities that we're in, the events that we're involved in. You know, just meeting other people. And my friend Sam, actually, I got to know her through the school, but her son Jude has Duchenne's muscular dystrophy.
Okay.
So he was at the school. You would have seen him because he used to be in a wheelchair. He was in year six. He's just moved.
Okay.
But you probably would have seen him.
Yeah.
But he got diagnosed when he was just in, like, still in the infant school. And I can actually remember her telling me. I came out and then the thing at the time said, you should tell Colette because she'll understand.
Yeah.
And she told me. And it's something that probably won't go past teen. Because it's a muscle wasting condition.
Yeah. Right.
Whereas Luke just doesn't have muscles.
Yeah.
You know, so he just doesn't have them. They won't grow back.
Yeah.
You can't really do muscle transplants.
No, can't do anything. No. However.
Yeah. You can get, I mean, the whole point is to get people independent.
Yes.
With all the treatment. And it got to, like, he had this arm surgery at 6 to have this muscle taken from here to here. And it was just tiny. So his arms really don't function much better than they did, but there's a bit of a difference.
Yeah.
So this was to get him to be able to do this.
So can he lift his arm? Can he?
I mean, he uses his arms. If you see him and he can, you know, pick something up. He can get his arms on the table. He can put the food up to his mouth. Right. He's really independent.
So he can feed himself.
Yeah, he can feed himself.
Can he go to the toilet himself?
Yes. He can't wipe his bottom, but he can do the toilet. He can pull his trousers down to get, you know, it's like, luckily he's a boy, really.
Exactly.
And you know, as I was saying, his brother is amazing with him as well. So he's just 2 years older, and he just does stuff for him without.
So how are the kids with him? Did they? Was it strange for them?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I suppose because the older girls, they would have been more aware, wouldn't they? Of
Yeah, definitely. I think everybody was just happy he was alive.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and although, you know, people probably felt sorry for us, we were just really happy he was alive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think because maybe what I do or my job or what I've seen other people going through, I was older and I think I just thought, you know, this isn't great for him, but we can get through this and it's just our job now to get him as mobile as possible.
Yeah.
So we never really knew if we would walk. We never knew,
you
know, what would happen. But so he just amazes me every day with what he can do and his attitude. He's really competitive, really sporty. So he just started to play boccia. It's generally mostly people. Well, you have to sit down to play a bit. It's like bowls.
Yeah.
But it's a sport. It's a really inclusive sport. So he plays against adults because it's not age related. So he was in a competition recently, and he managed to do. I was really proud of himself and his attitude about it is really because he is competitive and he's kind of.
Oh, good.
And what I see with him, he's so used to being around adults.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I think maybe at some point he probably was a little bit cocky when he was a bit younger. But he's kind of calmed that down, or maybe a little bit bossy to get people to do things for him.
Yeah.
Didn't get that from me or anything.
Not at all.
Yeah, exactly. But now he's learned to kind of be polite about asking for help. And you know, but he doesn't, with his brother, he'll just tell him, get me this, do that. And then
so will he go to Woodbridge then?
No, it can't. It's such a shame, actually, because my other kids all went to
Woodbridge. Yeah, I was going to say.
It's not actually accessible. So in Hackney.
This is the senior school, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Hackney, where I work. All the secondary schools were knocked down and rebuilt.
That's
They're all
right.
got amazing, accessible buildings, so any child can go to any school with a disability. But in Redbridge, it's a lot of really old buildings. So you've got an old building, and you've got all the new building, and you've got massive, massive schools and massive sites. Most of them are like that.
Yeah.
So actually, in Redbridge, the only accessible school is Seven Kings, which is just down. Well, Seven Kings really down that way, against Hill. So we've kind of always known he'll go there. We were kind of prepared to put maybe a bit of a fight with Woodbridge to help make it accessible.
Yeah.
But, you know, it costs millions and millions and millions of pounds. Plus that building's a listed building, so you have to get all this permission and everything.
Right.
So I just thought, I think at some point, and then I just started hearing really good things about Seven Kings. And then I actually also thought, he won't be the only child in the school with a disability.
No. Yes.
So I think if he'd gone to Woodbridge, he would be the only one that walked differently or did things differently. Yeah. And he's never been bullied, as far as I know. I think, or if he has, he's learned to deal with it.
Yeah.
But he, I think, you know, into the teenagers can be horrible.
Yeah. They
And there's a lot of kids at that school as well. It's like 10 formatories. It's a massive school.
We'd be knackered going around. Yeah. I sort of thought when he went to secondary, we'd get him like a power wheelchair, but there's no way he'd go in a power wheelchair.
No.
Because he doesn't need it. He likes walking.
He wouldn't want it.
No, he wouldn't. He goes on a school trip, he won't. I mean, he's got a wheelchair, which we push, but he won't let them take it because he wants to walk.
So, yeah.
You know, you'll see me walking up and down with him, and he wants to walk to school. And,
I mean, I've only ever seen him walking.
I do get the car sometimes, yeah. Even though I only live around the corner, but that's more of my laziness. Yeah. This morning we got out, he's like, can we walk to school today? I was like, I literally live two roads away from school. Because I can drive it around, and they won't let me go in the car park.
Yeah. but there is that, isn't there? I guess it's like, you know, if you don't want people to see you in a wheelchair, you don't want to go in it and see people to see you, you know, and you can walk.
It's, yeah, I think that's the thing. He doesn't like to be, although he knows he's different, he doesn't like to be seen as being different. And he likes to be doing stuff with his friends, not be with the adult pushing a wheelchair.
So, at
Seven Kings, it's got, so all the children in Redbridge, and actually from some other brothers with physical disabilities, go to Seven Kings.
Right, okay.
So they've got a massive department of support. They've got like a disability cricket team.
Ah.
They've got, so he will be one of...
Yeah.
30 kids with disability.
And it'll all mix in and
adult friends who went to that school.
Right.
My friend Sobia, she used to go to that school, and she... it was that was the school then that kids with disabilities went. I've got a friend who's got brittle bone disease, who's like 30 now.
Okay.
She went to that school from Newham because that was the school that had all the access and also the support. So I do feel that. I felt when I found more about the school, I thought, actually, it's the right school for him to go to.
Yeah.
It won't be the only one. And he's really happy to go there.
How will he get there?
I was thinking, you can get transport.
Yes.
I was thinking, you won't want to do that. So I'll take him in the morning and then go to work. Anyway, he so does not want me to take him to school. He wants to go.
Oh, really?
Well, I think there's a bus. I think there must be somebody on Rose Avenue that goes to the school. So I see the bus dropping somebody off. So what the head teacher, when we went, when she basically said they make friends with all the people on the bus.
Yes,
You know, so he won't want you driving, and we want to be on the bus with all of his friends. So that's great. So they'll pick him up like 7:30, and then.
Brilliant.
Home after school,
that's great.
So, really
so he'll have that independence for school as well. Like,
and I think mentally it's good for him not to have his mum take him.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, because I mean, maybe I do baby him a little bit, but he doesn't really like being babied at all.
I think you're going to, though, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're going to. I mean,
definitely.
Naturally, we do, but obviously, you're going to do it.
Any transition is hard as a parent. Going from infant to juniors was hard. And for all of mine, and then it's still hard going to secondary. But then you realise.
So you're not going to have any more then?
Well, first of all, I'm far too old. I took my mum for a scan yesterday at Bart's because she's got a lung condition as well, and which is quite stressful because she's supposed to have an operation on the 31st of March in the midst of all of this.
Oh, God.
And they were like, you're not pregnant, because I was at this like radio thing. I was like, you are absolutely joking.
I bloody well hope not.
Yeah, can you imagine?
I was a miracle, God, no, it's going to happen. If I was, it would be a miracle. So,
gone back to show the guy that told you that?
Yeah. No, but I'll tell you, this is a really good story. I wanted to take him back to show him, but I really needed to forgive him first anyway. I didn't bother. I'm not sure if I haven't forgiven him or I'm just like, anyway, what I did I had him and got involved with like support groups through Facebook, and then there's a tag charity, and there's the Arthur Apples group charity, UK charity. So I suddenly start to meet all these people and find out more about it and realise it wasn't as rare as we thought, and that there's loads of kids. I met a girl, actually an American group, who lived down in South London.
Oh,
and then me and her got together with our two boys who are the same age, and we're still friends. That's why I thought it was important for him to meet other people that were like him. And then I actually thought, you know what, I realised that the information they'd given me was wrong, or it wasn't 100%.
No.
That wouldn't necessarily be the outcome. So I wrote to the geneticist.
Yeah.
And I wrote to her, you know, following up on this, this is Luke. I found out more about Arthur Kyphosis. Actually, the information you gave us wasn't right, and this is his outcome. Because she was a lovely person, and she wrote a lovely letter back to me, said, I'm so happy to hear this. I'm going to go away and do more research. She said, the thing with I'm a geneticist with genetic conditions. She didn't even really know Arthur Kyphosis. The part that one that he has wasn't genetic. There's thousands of them.
Yeah.
So we don't know everything about everyone.
Yeah.
Anyway, then through being part of the support group, we used to have all the people from the southeast would come to my house like once a year. So we'd have like a barbecue and invite all the kids over and the family, so the families could get to know each other. So by this time, Luke was about five. And I met this girl from Brighton. In fact, it was the one I was just talking to earlier. So she'd come up from Brighton. She's a teacher with her husband and their little boy, Joey. And she basically said, oh, I got referred to King's College Hospital and I got to see this lovely geneticist. So Joey's about 2 or 3 years younger than Luke. And she was so positive about the possible outcome for him. And I still think, wow, Joey's alive.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because she would have told her the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she would have told, maybe she wouldn't have terminated him, or maybe she would have. You just don't know. But I still sort of think every time I hear her talking about Joey, I'm thinking, I'm so glad you were given that comfort.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, because she just thought she was a lovely lady, but she was really like, no, I've met a child with arthrogryposis and he's doing this and that. So.
Yeah. But that's the only way you change things, isn't
definitely.
It?
Definitely.
I mean, that's the only way you make a change.
Yeah.
Is if, you know, the fact that you went back and you highlighted all the positive things
exactly.
And that changes her perception for everybody that comes in. That's,
definitely.
That's
and it's not even
way.
Just her, it's also like the medical professionals,
absolutely.
Physiotherapists, all of those kind of people as well. So we're some part of the TAG charity now.
Yeah.
And we do like a great Ormond Street clinic. So if there's, so they'll have like one day a month where there's people from TAG, including like parents like me and people, adults with arthrogryposis, who'll be at the clinic just to talk to the people about the support they can get and about to meet other children. And cause I think that we went to like a family conference when Luke was about two, so he was still in having surgery and not walking and everything, and I saw this teenage boy walking. He was probably about 14 or 15 and he was with all the other teenagers, and I saw it and I thought, oh, if only Luke could ever walk like that. Anyway, that's exactly how he walks, with straight legs and straight arms, and it's exactly the same. And actually we went to the conference, we hadn't been for a few years, and we went again this year and I saw the boy. And I said to him, it's amazing, because he's like 20 odd now. I was like, it's amazing, you gave me so much hope for Luke. And I think people look at Luke and it's like, okay, my son might, or my daughter might not walk like that, but at least the ability to function.
Well, it's the possibilities, isn't it? Exactly. It's the possibilities, and knowing that, you know, well, that's what he's got to look forward to.
Exactly.
Instead of all the shit and the problems and all the hospital visits and the
it's
depressing stories.
Yeah,
I've got that kind of physical visibility.
Exactly.
But that's why it's really good for, I mean, I work in Haringey and I work quite closely with lots of charities, but I'm really passionate about getting, you know, children with disabilities in mixed schools, because I think it is really important.
Mm.
You're never going to make a change with young people, or,
true.
You're not, unless people actually see children with disabilities.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like TV programmes. I know, they're
much more visible.
They're trying to change.
Yeah.
It's like the diversity thing, but with disabilities.
Well, I love the last leg. They've got the guy on there. I don't know what his position is, but I love the fact that he's got big character as well.
Yeah.
I think like Luke wants to be on telly and he wants to be a
I'm sure that he will be.
He will be.
I think he will do anything that he
wants to. If you know anybody who works for Sky, that's what he wants to do.
Oh, okay.
I said maybe BT Sport, because it's like on the Olympic car.
Yeah,
he wants to. He'd be a sports commentator. He can talk to you about sport all day, every day. And I'm really not interested.
But what an outlet.
So tell me anyway in detail about every football match. And
but what an outlet for somebody.
What
an ambition.
Well, I think also because his ambition was to play for Man U. Then when he realised he couldn't, he was play for disability and football team, because we went to the Paralympics when he was four. So we saw people with cerebral palsy playing football.
Yeah, we went.
Yeah, and we went to loads of stuff, and that inspired me. You know, it was like,
unbelievable.
You know, and I thought, well, they can all, and like, actually Luke's attitude, because he's kind of competitive, is finding something for him that he can be competitive
in.
So he's absolutely determined, and then he decided he'd want to be Man U manager
and
sports commentator. So that's still his ambition. He'll still tell you that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And I said maybe BT Sports, it's quite close to us, and he said, no, I want to be at Sky Sports. So he was telling a friend of mine over, and he knew someone at Sky Sports. So anyway, we got to go and see, you know, the thing that's Soccer AM. So he got invited, got to go behind the scenes, and he got to have a look around and everything. So that was it. So he asks and people just give him things.
Well, they're great.
They should. They should.
As well. And he's quite sweet as well.
Oh, he's lovely. He's
Tell him to keep doing that. He'll get a break somewhere.
A really good expression on his face. He'll be good on telly.
So has he got does he have to have any more operations or anything, or is that it now?
I think he will. I think it's a process. I think what happens is his body's wanting to go back to how it was when he was born. So as he grows, it pulls back, so his foot, that's why his foot's in. I had to have serial casting again, because his foot starts to turn under again.
Right.
That's why he wears the splint to stop it turning under. So his feet and his, nothing looks like a normal foot would look.
Yeah.
But it's workable, and it doesn't. And I always think he must be in pain because all of his joints, he walks awkwardly. His feet are very awkwardly shaped, I suppose. I always say to him, do your feet hurt? Sometimes his knees hurt if he walks too much.
Yeah.
Maybe he's used to just having a level of pain that he's used to. Yeah, he never moans about it.
Possibly.
About 2 years ago, we'd come back from an appointment at Royal London. It was just me and him in the kitchen. He really likes going to hospital because he gets time off school just for me. It's all my attention.
Yeah.
Anyway, I sort of sat and I said to him, "Do you ever feel sorry for yourself?" And he said, and he thought about it and he said, "No, because I've got so many good things in my life." Yeah. I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
With your children and with the kids I work with kids, it's like you're trying to teach them resilience. Life is going to be tough and you need to learn how to kind of come back from that.
Absolutely,
That's definitely one of the things I think is really important with kids. Yeah. It's like everything's not going to be perfect all the time, be honest.
No. Yeah.
And I think with Luke, we've been honest at appropriate times with him when, realising he has a disability, getting older, those kind of things. But he really is a very thankful person. I think he's very, he's got a really positive attitude about everything. So.
Well, I think you are, aren't you? Yeah. So that will always sort of go into his world.
And it's the people that have been around him bringing him up. Not even just siblings, we've got a big community of friends. I mean, he's been brought up by my friends, and I think you need that with your children.
Yeah, you do.
I'm not the best mum. I have my good and bad points, I'm sure. I learned that when I had actually Nadia, the second one. When Kira was about three, I made my friend Carol, who now lives on my... She's got the daughter Lola, who's at the school.
Yes, yeah.
So we met when our kids were three in the park, and none of us had any friends. Because both of us were working.
Yeah.
So we weren't around any groups or anything, and we just became friends then. The kids became friends, and then we've got a bigger community. And I think really important when you're bringing up your children to bring them up in a community.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, 100%. With other people, allow other people to do things with them that maybe you wouldn't do. And so I feel like all my children, but Luke particularly, is a community child. He's a product of thousands of people that have been involved with him, bringing him up and helping me and everything. So I think that's probably given him some of the resilience and everything as well. And it's had its hard moments, but I don't think it was hard. I just was really thankful for the years. Now I look at him, his journey, and then how he is with people and how you can teach people and how people now know about arthrogryposis because of Luke, even if they can't say it.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you say it now?
No, I'm going to practice.
Do you want to give it a go?
No. Arthrogryposis.
Arthrogryposis.
I think it's Greek or Latin or something like that, but it just means it's like three bits. Arthrogryposis, limbs not moving, or stiff, or something like that, stiff.
Yeah.
So if you break it down into three, it kind of makes a bit more sense. So they could have given it an easier name.
They really could have. They could have given a lot of them a bit of an easier name, but they don't.
We've learned a lot of it as we've gone along. I'm sure there's going to be lots of people that he'll meet in life that he'll.
Yeah.
So, I think when my husband was very, he's much not as positive as me in some ways.
I was going to ask you about your husband.
And he, when Luke was young, he was like, we need to get a bungalow and you'll live with us. And I was like, Luke is not going to want to live with his mum and dad for the rest of his life. Luke is going to want to get married and have children. That's what he's going to want to do.
Yeah.
And most of the... Now we've met, adults with arthrogryposis living perfectly normal lives with children, and the children adapt to their parents' disability.
Yeah.
And even that's been amazing. I remember meeting a woman who's... We went to the first conference and her arms were the same as Luke's and she had two children. And she just said when she had the baby... She could hold them like this, but obviously she couldn't pick them up, and they just adapted to her.
Yeah, they will.
Wow.
And as they got bigger, they'd climb up on her.
Wow. Yeah.
They'd hold on to her, and she'd be able to carry them because they'd be gripping on. So they just adapted to her. They didn't know any different.
Wow.
So I think that's what I've seen now. It's like Luke will have no problem being a dad.
No.
I don't think he'll have a problem doing anything. No, really.
No, exactly.
No.
Which is wonderful.
Which is what you must let them do. Yeah. And we must let them do that. I think sometimes there's... carers and parents, I think it's quite a scary prospect, isn't it?
Definitely.
Because you don't want to let them into the big bad world and for them to fend for themselves. But actually,
it's where we all learn, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the right decision. Yeah. If he wants to walk to school, he'll do anything.
Yeah,
I'm telling you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so that I literally only have a few more months left to do the school run, and then it's me done.
And is that, so that she does forever.
I've seen, for 17 years I've been doing it. Since
Wow. So she said 17
years. 17 years since Kira started.
Oh, my God. That is a long time. To be doing the school run.
I don't know that many people anywhere. I'm saying, you know, when my kids were younger, so I know you guys through Laura.
Yeah.
And so I know, like, people who've got kids in your year.
Yeah.
I don't really know anybody anymore. Yeah. So now, when I was kind of going, Luke was going into year six, there's just loads of parents. I'm thinking, I used to know everybody. And half these people are.
But I'm still here.
I was young when I started. God, now I'm literally.
So how old were you when you had your first daughter?
28.
Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you when young.
I felt like I was young. I had no friends with children, like not any.
None.
And I met my husband and got pregnant straight away, so it wasn't I wasn't in a sort of like, let's get married and settle down frame of mind. I literally was like, met somebody, fell in love, got pregnant, had
Did you
child.
Meet on holiday?
No, we met here. We met when we were out for our birthdays.
Right, okay.
I'm in London, so he's from London, but he's quite sensible.
So are you the nonsensical one?
Ah, okay. You've not worked that one out yet. Anyway, it seems to work.
None of Amy's friends are sensible.
No. Yeah. I'm the sensible one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why we got on when we met. Yeah. I was like, oh, I like you.
Anyway, let's wrap this up. Thank you so much.
Thank you for giving us
your time, and we'll sort another one out for soon.
Definitely.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
So,
how was all that?
That was a story, wasn't it?
That was a story and a half.
People are amazing, aren't they?
Humans are amazing.
They really are.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Man.
if you want to know any more about arthrogryposis.
Well done, Amy.
If you've been affected by this. Or if you want to know if there's any way you can help people.
Then get in touch. We can... Colette obviously travels around and does lots of seminars. Yeah. And she does online stuff as well, and she's very contactable.
Yes, she is. And we'll put her details up.
Yeah, she's got a real like wealth of knowledge in this area.
Yeah.
And she's obviously, you know, throughout the years, throughout the ages of her son, she's gone through quite a lot. So
yes,
she's able to make sure that you can know everything at each of those sort of push points.
Yeah. But yeah, we hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Please subscribe. Again, if you've got something you want to say...
Yeah, then get in touch.
Yep, get in touch.
We're all ears.
We are. Well, that'd be weird if we were all ears.
I'm just looking at Amy's ears.
I've got quite big ears.
You have got big ears.
I have got quite big ears.
That's why I call you a pixie.
Pixie.
I've got little ears.
They're normal size. I wouldn't say they're little. Are they little?
A little.
Compared to the size of your head, do you mean? You have got nice ears. I don't like my ears.
No.
Or my nose.
Oh, don't stop biting your bum nose again.
Your bum nose.
Never mind, darling.
But yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yes, but it is.
Anyhow, anyway. But yeah, subscribe and contact us. We're Mum and Mama Pod. We're on social media.
We're Twittering.
We are Twittering.
We haven't done Twitter yet, though.
Well,
we might have to do Twitter.
We were going to have done Twitter.
Have we?
Yeah. We're recording these before this goes out, you see. So
thank God.
By the time this goes out, we'll be all over Twitter.
We'll be on it.
Yeah.
A bit like your dating.
Yes, bruv. All right. Take care. Have a good week.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.